WTIC, thanks so much for being here on this Monday. Yes, I know it's not Marco Polo Day, but Marco Polo is the guy who was so good, he had such good PR people that he got a swimming pool game named after him. So I thought he was worthy of a little mention here, even though it's not Marco Polo Day. 860-522-9842. Joining us now is Len Suzio, former state senator, and it's really nice to have you here on a holiday. Hi, Len.
Hey, Todd. I remember playing Marco Polo in the pool with my children when they were young. It was a fun game.
What was the major skill that you think they were developing playing that game?
How to trick people.
which
people.
Prepares them for the politics business, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so let's talk about minimum wage. You sent me a couple emails today, some intriguing stuff.
Yeah, we've been focusing on the increase in the minimum wage, which the Connecticut legislature passed back a few months ago, and the first increase was effective October 1st, so only a little over a week ago. And by itself, that first increase, okay, it's not helpful, but it's not too bad. It's 90 cents an hour. But the legislature didn't stop there. The legislature passed a law that requires an increase in the minimum wage every year for the next 4 years. That's a dollar more per hour. So by 2023, the minimum wage will have increased by nearly 50% from $10.10 an hour to $15 an hour. And it's going to have a devastating impact on small businesses. One of the experiences I had this weekend was I went into a local establishment that's a family-owned business, and the owner knew who I was, and he came up to me. He said, "Len, what's going on? Senator Suzio, what's going on with this minimum wage? I just had to start paying it next week. It's costing me $500 more per week." And he employs nothing but kids. He's got a very simple operation. These are young kids. They're not supporting families or anything else.
I'm sorry, is this a food service operation?
No, actually, it's a UPS store.
Oh, okay,
a lot of
retail.
UPS stores are franchises.
Yeah, nuts and bolts retail operation, and he's getting hit for $25,000 a year.
Initially, but he told me, when the whole thing's phased in, it's going to be over $100,000 a year. It's going to be $125,000 a year. And he said, "Len, my revenues are going up. They've been flat. If anything, they've been soft because of the soft Connecticut economy." He said, "I can't afford it. I don't know whether I can stay in business." Mm-hmm. With this kind of a cost impact. It's a devastating impact on a small business. So I don't know exactly what he's doing, but I doubt it's probably in the ballpark of $700,000 or $800,000 a year. And if he incurs a $125,000 increase,
yeah, that's it. He'll close.
That's it. Yeah. The end of his business.
But did you hear Ned Lamont a couple of weeks ago speaking to the AFL-CIO? He was
when he was
so dismissive. If you can't survive a 50% increase in minimum wage, you shouldn't be in business. Go away.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think Ned had ever had to deal with that. He was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. And so whenever he had issues with his business problem, he could just go into his own bank account.
Well, that's the thing. He never even had to hawk the silver. He had so much money.
No. He doesn't know what it's like. I was a small business entrepreneur for many years, and when I was in banking, I worked with small business owners, entrepreneurs. They're the lifeblood of the economy. They're the ones who create more jobs than the big businesses. But you put your everything on the line when you're in business on your own. You have no guarantee that you're going to make enough money to pay the payroll, let alone your own pay. It's a throwback to caveman times, basically, where you have to basically every day you have to put your life on the line to put food on the table. And so when you do have success, you deserve it, not only because of your extremely hard work, but also because of the risk that you take. In small business finance, they have what's called sweat equity. That's when people don't have enough money to adequately capitalize their business. So what they do is they work twice as hard, three times harder than most people, and they make up for the lack of money with, extra hard work. Everybody chips in.
Well, instead of hiring people, they hire themselves for free. And they do slave labor with the hope that they might survive. So tell us again, then, what is the focus of this story today on minimum wage?
Well, the other thing that I think has not been talked about much at all is the impact on government spending. I sent you an Office of Fiscal Analysis report related to the bill that was passed. And it's going to cost the state of Connecticut alone about $38 to $39 million more per year for the same employees doing the same job, but they're all at the low end of the wage scale. Mm-hmm. And moreover, it's going to affect local municipal governments to the tune of millions of dollars a year as well. And in that OFA report, they cited like a city like Bridgeport, but when it's fully phased in, it'll cost Bridgeport more than $1 million a year to pay the lowest paid workers. And a moderate sized city like Manchester, I think it was about $600,000 a year.
All right, Len, hold on. We're going to grab a traffic and weather update. We'll continue the conversation with former state senator Len Suzio. 860-522-9842. Len Suzio here. And we are talking about the state of the state and the lust that the left has for utter destruction. I wonder, you know, as you were describing the impact of this minimum wage hike, the 50% hike, I was wondering if they were looking to, if Democrats thought they could force the economic disaster into the marketplace at a time when they figured, oh, Republicans would probably be winning some elections and controlling the state and let the Republicans deal with it. In the meantime, the Democrats would have pulled off giving all this benefit to one of their core constituencies. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, yeah, you're kind of articulating a thought that they think all is lost anyway, so why not pass something that they're going to be penalized in the next election no matter what? Because the governor's very lowly ranked in terms of his performance rating. Even Democrats strongly disapprove of his performance. So I think there might be some truth to that, Todd. But also, I mean, some of these people just don't know what they're talking about. When you hear a Democrat defend it saying, well, look at this, all money that's going to go back into the economy anyways, it's good for the economy. Well, then my response to that is, well, let's mandate everybody get a 50% raise because it'll be good for the Connecticut economy, right? I mean, it just shows you that they're just totally ignorant when it comes to economic reality.
Well, I think they're actually not ignorant because they don't jump up and down with excitement over the idea of the 50% increase for everybody because they know there's nowhere to get that money. And they know that it would lead to economic destruction. What they're doing with minimum wage is doing a calculated. Like, they're very careful about it. They know minimum wage is a great political issue for them, but they know it's also dangerous. What's strange right now is that at a time of clear vulnerability to the Connecticut economy, which has already been destroyed by the policies of the left, they're looking to double down on destructive policies. And that's what's strange, is that they're willing to do it right now, and that's what leads me to conspiracy theories.
Well, the focus has been on the impact on businesses and particularly small businesses. You and I talked last week about the Harvard Business School study that showed that the impact would be dramatic on industries like the restaurant industry that employ more than half their labor force is low wage. It's minimum wage. And there could be a huge surge in business failures in the restaurant side, and then the grocery side, the same thing. And those stores that do survive and those restaurants that do survive are going to have to pass very dramatic cost increases onto their own customers. So ultimately, every single one of your listeners is going to be paying for this big increase in the minimum wage. And I like the fact, Todd, that you're emphasizing it's a 50% increase. It's not just 90 cents an hour and that's it. If it stopped at that, maybe the shock would be absorbed. But they're going on for the next 4 years at $1 an hour each year. And after that, it's going to be indexed. So it's never ending, Todd. It's just going to be permanently indexed into the law now. And people like this business owner I was talking to over the weekend, he employs a lot of kids who are in college or, you know, in high school. They're not supporting a family. They don't have to deal with the issues of a grown-up would have to deal with. And so they're basically stuck in a situation now where they're going to be making this extra money. And what's going to happen is guys like my friend, they're going to lay off people. They can't afford to pay that. So all these beginning jobs for unskilled people are going to start disappearing. And you're going to get things like Stop and Shop, where they're having the robots go in their aisles now, and they're going to start replacing the unskilled and low-skilled labor with automation and automatons. You watch. It's coming, and it's going to be to the devastation of the very people that the Democrats say they want to help the most.
Here's the other thing I'm wondering about is that when you raise the minimum wage and you increase the costs of labor, the way I would think that besides just cutting jobs and giving poorer service, you know, undermining the service that you provide to your customers, the other option would be to not provide a ladder to climb to higher level jobs, to get rid of the higher level jobs, cut the number of hours that your part-time workers are working and add more part-time workers to make sure you never have to pay any overtime. And that would be a way to lower your overall labor cost.
Well, you know what? You hit the nail on the head, Todd. Business owners, when they're forced to face a cost increase like this, they have to do something about it. They can't be indifferent to it and just say, So some of them are going to raise prices. Some of them are going to lay off people. Some of them are going to lose their businesses. And mm-hmm. some of them are going to look to see if they can swap other costs for this to compensate for the increased costs that they're going to have to pay. And you just cited, I think, one key thing that is an option for these business owners to do. So ultimately, economics is survival of the fittest, basically. It's a law that you can't circumvent. If you offer a good product at a fair price that people want, you're going to get paid for it. And same thing with labor. You're offering your labor, and if you're unskilled, you don't have any kind of value to your labor other than you could just stock grocery store shelves or whatever. Well, you got to start somewhere. You need to begin somewhere where you learn and get your basic skills built up. And it's a shame, again, that those people are likely to see their jobs affected the most by this. And what's proposed as a benefit to these low-paid, unskilled workers is going to end up backfiring, and I believe it's going to end up hurting them significantly in the form of lost jobs and cuts in other benefits, too, by the way. That's the other way business owners could do it. They start saying, well, we got to pay for this, then we got to cut a cost somewhere else, and it's likely to be on the labor side, Todd.
What kind of benefits do you think would be? I mean, the health care, they're sort of locked into because everyone expects that, but maybe they'd get rid of every other kind of benefit?
Yes. I mean, you know, again, you don't have to vacation time, for example, time off, et cetera.
Paid time off.
And again, you can cut back, too, on overtime. And when you're a small business owner, you refer to what I said a few minutes ago, sweat equity. You start working harder and you replace one worker with your own labor you could put in. And believe me, many small business owners do that. They work two and three jobs at the same time so that they can get their business to a point where it is economically stable.
Which brings
a good foundation.
It brings you back around to why would the Democrats be doing this now? I don't quite understand the political calculation. We just have a minute left, Len, so give us an answer on that.
Well, I think it's an appeal to this idea that you're being charitable and you're being good to people who need the help the most. And it's an appeal tugging at the heartstrings. Democrats and liberals legislate by feelings. They don't legislate by thinking. They legislate and they get elected by appeals to our feelings, not our thoughts, and thinking through things rationally. And that's, I think, the heart of one of the big distinctions between liberalism and conservatism. Liberals, there's an old saying, you know, if you're young and you don't, you're not liberal, you don't have a heart. If you're old and not conservative, you don't have a brain. Well, I think that kind of hits at the whole point that liberals are base their policies on feelings and conservatives base their policies on rationale and thoughts.
Well, when it comes to rationale and being rational, you do a good job, Len Susio. Thank you for being here. And enjoy the rest of your day off.
I'm going to. I'm going home to chase some grandchildren around again.
All right.
Enjoy my feelings.
Nothing better than that. Enjoy. Former State Senator Len Susio on WTIC. And talking about where the state is at. It's kind of scary, the degree to which the bad policies, the bad economic policies, are being piled onto an economy that's already underperforming. What is that all about?